Hey, Brendan.
Hello, Alan.
The Not a Thing podcast is on the air. It's a day later because I've been traveling. I've been at the Penny Arcade Expo, like I am every year. Actually, it's been I think it's my 5th year this year, and I found out that this was their 10th year in Seattle, which is kind of wild. I had no idea it had been on quite as long as that. But yeah, it was 4 days of a lot of games and lines and nerds and actually quite a lot of fun. It was good. I think the overall verdict was that it was very much in the groove of they have it working. They have a lot of things that they've optimized to work out, and it was just good. I liked a lot of the programming and the panels that I was able to make. I liked a lot of the games that I was able to play, and I wrote a bunch of stuff down so we could talk about it on the show. I mean, how was your week?
less gamey. I mean, I played some drinking games at a barbecue, but enjoying the last days of summer.
Yeah, definitely. The 3-day weekend was, I don't know, I feel sort of like I missed it in that I was actually going to a convention Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, but I really shouldn't think of it that way. I mean, I was really not at work from Thursday through today, which is Wednesday. So it's pretty good, right?
Well, I mean, I didn't have a 3-day weekend. I had a regular weekend. I worked Monday, so it really was nothing special for me.
Well, we're honoring those that labor on Labor Day. So I guess you took one for the team on that one.
Took one for my paycheck, double pay.
Very nice. Yeah, the convention itself was pretty much like it is every year. There's a lot of video games, there's a lot of tabletop stuff. They have some concerts mixed in. Actually, I think the concerts may have been the highlight of it for me. I only went to the second with the kind of general floor kind of setup, and then just played in an auditorium with seats. And so the seats filled in as the seats filled in, and I thought that worked a lot better because there were just not the very obvious, like, people who were there to see music and people who were there who've never been to concert before. So, which I think was really good. I mean, the upside was both of those acts were very, very solid. So, everyone was into it. I think the they were handing out earplugs, which I didn't think was absolutely necessary
Not a
for
thing.
but the space they were holding it in was big enough that it wasn't like, super echoey and oppressive sounding. So it was probably fine for the level that they were playing.
Has PAX reached max saturation? Like, does it grow bigger every year? Like
Well,
something like a Comic-Con or a Burning Man just gets, they expand the number of people allowed.
I guess 3 years ago, which is only the 2nd year we went, they had already said that they were maxed out. Like it was, they were selling out every year, and that year they sold out within 24 hours. That was the first time they did that. And last year they added a day, so it was 4 days. It used to be just three, and this year was 4 days as well, and those went really quickly. And but even though it was all 4 days sold out, it actually didn't feel as crowded as the very first time I went. And I don't know if I'm just getting used to the crowds, but I did notice there were a lot of people buying and reselling badges outside of the convention hall this year, and like a lot more than I've seen in the past. And I'm wondering if that's kind of factoring into how sold out it actually is. I mean, I was seeing people holding, you know, 15 badges deep, stacks of them, you know, selling them out on the street. And it just seemed like a lot. I don't know how many, you know, that really turns out to be, or how much that actually impacts the show. Or maybe they're just a lot better about spreading the programming out, because they did host a lot of stuff not in the convention center. So they have a couple hotels that they were working with. They kind of bought up the large conference rooms, and they would hold panels there rather than at the convention center itself. So convention center was just the expo hall. And that does always seem fairly full. I mean, it was never like at the Comic-Con level where you literally cannot walk without bumping into people. There were still some points where the lines would get a little dense, but it felt, you know, reasonably navigable this year anyway. I think the some of the programming or some of the games definitely had a lot of people in certain clusters, like the PlayStation and the Xbox kind of areas, because they both had their own like huge booths. They managed the lines a lot better for waiting for the games, so I think that took away from just like the tons of people milling around kind of feeling. There were a couple games that had a lot of people, so there's a new Borderlands game coming, which is like a half sequel, half prequel, apparently. And so that had a huge line to it. And then also Telltale Games, the guys that make the Walking Dead series of games, which the last part of the second season just came out last week. So I haven't jumped in to kind of finish that story arc off yet. But
I finished that this weekend.
Oh, yeah?
I was one behind, so I finished at 4 and 5 this weekend.
Yeah, I finished 4 just before we left, and I saw 5 was in the queue, but there was no way I was going to do that and get, like, you know, any amount of sleep before flying.
Well, we'll have to do a review of that, because I have some things to say about it.
Oh, really? Okay, all right.
If you played it, let me know.
Okay, yeah, it'll probably be this weekend. I'm still kind of on a good gaming high for that. Well, anyway, Telltale Games, they use that kind of episodic gameplay thing for, I believe it was Fables, A Wolf Among Us. So that kind of branching storyline. And they're also making one in the Borderlands universe. So there's essentially two Borderlands games coming out in short order from like different publishers. So if you're a fan of the Borderlands stuff, that's out. I'm apparently not. So, you know, that was interesting, because I was able to, you know, just essentially skip those sections and, you know, play a bunch of other things. So I was able to play the Order 1886, which is kind of an awful name, but it's supposed to be kind of semi-supernatural, steampunky, like elite squad thing, 19th century kind of England setting, I think. And that was a fun game to play. I think the demo could have been a little better formatted, so people could kind of get into it. I don't know. Maybe I'm just bad at shooters now. But it was a little harder to figure out what the weapons did, because they didn't act as, you know, they weren't as like immediately point and shoot as I was expecting. But the game looks great. They do a really good job of using the PS4's power to swoop you into a cutscene and out of it without it having like interminable load times and stuff like that. That's something that I'm much more aware of, especially on PS4, because I played a bunch of those games in the PlayStation booth, And there were a lot of just like load times that you feel shouldn't be there. Like there should be more testing to make that process a lot smoother. And I thought 1886, The Order, handled that pretty well. And then there was another game that I thought didn't do it well. What was that called? let's not talk about it. It's better to kind of highlight the games that I thought did really well. I think the hot swag to get this year was there was a game called Dreadnought, which is sort of capital ship like fighting kind of game. So big slow moving ships. Which,
well, are we talking like ocean ships or spaceships?
Spaceships. Okay. Good point. So like a Battlestar kind of craft, but they're floating in like an atmosphere. So I don't know. Anyway, the swag for those were these lanyards that were fiber optics and they lit up, which was very, very kind of cool in the dimly lit kind of expo halls space. But I didn't want to wait in the 2-hour line to play a game about slow moving ships. So I kind of skipped that one. What was interesting was that there were, I think, a trend this year, or at least the trend for whatever they were showing at PAX, was other than The Order, 1886, and Far Cry 4, they actually had no shooters just kind of out on the floor. I feel like last year, like every other game that was released was a shooter of some sort, but they weren't really punching those up this year. So I don't know if they're just not demoing them because they don't have to. Like everyone's going to buy Call of Duty, whatever it is. So they don't really have to hype it up for people anymore. But there weren't any competitors kind of in that space. Instead, the shooters they had were like not first-person shooter kind of shooters. So like The Order 1886 is a third-person shooter. There was another third-person game that is not a shooter. It was from Bethesda, the guys that currently own the rights to Doom and Wolfenstein. And they had kind of a melee combat fighter game that called Battle Cry, which I thought played really well, but needed some tweaking. It's going to be free to play. I think they kind of messed up because they teased it and they said, yeah, there's a beta, but the beta isn't out yet. So it's like, you know, you can't, if it's going to be free to play and you can't play it, you kind of have missed your window by showing it off. Anyway, there also weren't as many League of Legends style games out. League of Legends or Dota 2, I guess. There was a huge section of the hall that was just for the League of Legends tournament. I guess there was some amount of like a regional tournament ladder happening, and I just avoided that whole section. I think we talked about it kind of last week with the acquisition of Twitch by Amazon. Kind of watching other people play games is not a thing. Twitch had a huge booth, and it was maybe one of the loudest booths because they had this kind of ongoing gamer commentary on whatever game they were showcasing, which was really weird when they were showcasing Blizzard's, I think it's called Heroes of the Storm, which is an online-only like Magic the Gathering-style collectible card game that you play completely digitally. And I think it's free to play. I'm not 100% sure. It was just weird watching cards appearing on a screen and having people kind of, oh my God, and kind of like react to that. I don't know. I mean, maybe outside of like the World Series of Poker, I don't know anyone that reacts to cards in that kind of fashion. So... but I think, you know, going back to what I was saying earlier about the non-traditional shooters, they also had World of Tanks. Actually, there's a whole like family of those: World of Tanks, World of Warships, World of Warplanes, where you play. They're all actually the same kind of model, where you play as one of those things, like a tank, and you can play online for free or upgrade. I mean, the free to play thing is around whether I like it or not. I actually don't, but that's definitely a game style that's kind of out. But yeah, I think if there was any like one genre that has really kind of backed off, it's been or at least played out on the floor, it was first person shooters. There's definitely an uptick in kind of platformy games, like, you know, the Super Mario kind of jumping kinds of things, and they're adding in kind of a lot more user-generated content for that, which is, it's kind of interesting. Like, one of the games that was out was an Adventure Time-based game, and it's a platformer, you know, jumping around, doing whatever. But one of the things was that you can use, I think it was built on an iPad kind of platform, and you can build your own levels with a built-in editor, but instead of creating it completely in the editor, they have a thing where you can draw your level, take a picture of it, and then it will import that and try and kind of, you know, push it into like the level format, and then you can just edit the level after you've drawn it, which I thought was a nice touch. It's a good game. They have nice kind of intellectual property based around it. So if you're fans of Adventure Time, are you a fan of Adventure Time?
I honestly haven't seen enough of it to really have a opinion on it. I know a lot of people like it.
Yeah, I like it. I don't know if I'm like rabid enough to want to play a game in that universe, but the folks that were there were really into the level building, and I think that comes from, because it looked a lot like stuff I've seen for Minecraft, which I'm still kind of baffled by that's a thing.
But it's addictive, man.
Is it really?
I only had the demo, and I was pretty hooked on it. So that's why I didn't buy the game, because I knew myself.
Yeah,
I couldn't be trusted.
That's interesting, because I think there is, I think it must just touch at the right level of, let me just play for a little more. Because I don't, like, it doesn't really have a plot to speak of and goals other than what you'd set, but it has enough of a, like, this is still fun kind of level, that I think that's what hooks people, and good for them for you know, figuring that out. I think let's see, what was another trend that I saw? Oh, other than doing anything with the Oculus Rift, which immediately had, like, you know, an hour line plus for any game that had the Oculus Rift attached, there were no interesting hardware games or interesting hardware involved that I saw at all. Like, there was no more rhythm games that involve, like, guitars or drums or anything like that.
There are no Rock Band battles?
No. There was, I guess, Harmonix is currently connected with Disney to do a Fantasia-inspired game, so you're, like, conducting the music. So they had a pretty good booth for that, but it's all Kinect-based, so Xbox only and stuff like that. There was no Sony stuff about their VR headset, which I was a little bummed about, but no, they're not bringing the Move to PS4, at least as far as I know, so That's not around. There was not a lot of novel stuff with the Wii U. You know, they weren't really pushing the that kind of secondary controller stuff anymore. The game seemed very just kind of straightforward. I mean, they had a lot of neat stuff in that they had, like, the Sonic series games, and I guess there's a new Super Smash Brothers, so that's kind of there. But most those are both kind of just straight ahead, you need a controller to play kind of games. There wasn't a lot of kind of new hardware kind of infused into the systems, and that's kind of an interesting trend, because I feel like last year there was it was kind of a lot with that too, like motion tracking kinds of games or things where you where you'd wear something. It seems like everyone is betting on the Oculus and VR related games, which I actually saw a panel about VR, which was good because it was listed as the history of VR. So they showed kind of the old school, heavy, like $1,000 helmet kinds of things. And, they kind of joked a little bit about the power glove and stuff like that. But, there's still, the same kind of complaints about the systems, which are the field of view is not really wide enough to feel immersive, and the eye strain is still kind of a big deal. Like, it's big enough of a deal that you don't want to wear, like, the screen for more than, you know, 30 or 45 minutes. And I don't know, as a gamer that has put in many an hour playing many a game, I can see that being a pretty limiting factor.
Yeah, 30 to 45 minutes is not enough. At least an hour, potentially 8, depending on the game.
Yeah, I think the only game that I was looking forward to that they didn't have around at all was Destiny, which is the new Bungie shooter.
Yes,
but they didn't have that out at all. Like, I don't think Bungie was even out on the floor, so that was kind of surprising. I mean, you know, I guess they just didn't want to release anything at this expo. Apparently, PAX South, which is in Texas for the first time, is in 2 months, so it's possible more stuff could show up there. I think they've fractured the brand a little bit in that there are now 4 of them. There's PAX Prime in Seattle, PAX East in Boston, PAX South in Texas, and they also do one in Australia. Like,
PAX Down Under?
Why not?
Well, I mean, that's 3 on, you know, the Northern Hemisphere and 1 in the Southern. That's, you know. That seems reasonable.
Yeah.
Population-wise.
Network your coverage a little bit. I'm surprised there's nothing in Europe, but I'm sure it's a licensing deal that's yet to be worked out.
Were there any new card games or board games that you that caught your fancy?
Yeah. What I always do is I troll around at the... they have a tabletop lending library, so they have just... you know, games upon games, and you can pick them up and check them out and try them. And I finally tried Forbidden Island, which is apparently the same designer who did Pandemic. But it's almost the same game. There's still kind of this cooperative nature, and there's like goals that you have to get, and every player has their own kind of special power that that means you all have to work as a team to make it work. And the mechanic for it is it's an island that's sinking, and I love it because the what you do is you form the island by dealing the cards out in a shape, and then as it sinks you turn the tile over, and that means it's flooded. And then if that card gets called again, and it's not shored up, it sinks below the waterline, and then it's it you remove it from play, and now that's a hole in like the pathing of the island and stuff. It's
well, that sounds like a fun educational game for global warming.
Right, instead of the island sinking, it's the waters rising. Of course,
it's gonna happen.
Yeah, it's a good game. I liked it a lot. I think I like it better than Pandemic because the theme is a little lighter. It's not the world is ending because of viruses or whatever.
I think both those hit too close to home.
But there's a follow-up to the game called Forbidden Desert, and that one is a neat mechanic too. So that one is there's a desert, and there are storms in the desert, and the storms kind of blow and shift the tiles from one end of the field to another, and you're trying to put together parts of a plane to escape. It's a neat, again, a neat mechanic, and a cooperative game that worked really well. There was another game that was like that last year that we found called Flashpoint, and we're probably going to get that one too. But the one game that I thought was really interesting, and I was able to grab it, and I was surprised because it's been out of print for a little while. I think they just reprinted it. It's called Betrayal at House on the Hill. And the way that one plays is there's a first phase of the game where everyone is drawing tiles to and placing tiles that are rooms of a house. And then at every turn, there's a chance of a haunting. And then as the game progresses, that chance becomes higher and higher until it becomes inevitable. And then once the haunting occurs, the house has been built out to some degree. And then whoever caused the haunting becomes the betrayer, and everyone else becomes the survivors. And what happens is, based on how long the game is and some other random factor, there's a book of rules.
Yeah, character race?
There's a book of rules that you then pull out, and it's like, okay, well, because of this and this, the betrayer's goal is X and the survivor's goal is Y, and there's these extra things that get thrown into the game. And so they've worked out some number of, I think there's like 50 different like scenarios to play out. So it just ups the replayability of the game. And it seemed like an interesting thing, but again, it'd been out of print. So I was glad to kind of find and grab that one. But what else did I get kind of in that? There's a game that is called Karate Fight, which is, it's kind of like a mix of Slapjack and War. And that's kind of fun. We did a demo play while we were waiting for I think we were waiting for a line, and then some guy like pulled up a table and then started playing it. And we're like, oh, what's that? And so that was cool. I mean, I think that's one of the things I like the most about Penny Arcade Expo is that a lot of the developers and folks that are demoing the games are really kind of into it. There are not a lot of... they have a explicit no booth babe policy, but I actually think that they don't really need it. I mean, I think the just having the developers and the actual gamers kind of out on the floor, people will kind of detect if you're not really a gamer and kind of just play the game to figure it out. But if you can connect with the developer and really get kind of rapport going, you can get a lot of information about the game, how it is, how it plays, how it really is. And that goes for the a lot of the board and tabletop games too. So that's still really fun about the show.
It still has its street cred.
Yeah. Yeah.
As much as a gaming convention can.
Well, it certainly kind of floods the area around the convention center for a couple or four days anyway. I mean, if you walk a couple blocks in any direction, and there's just tons of folks in like gaming t-shirts and cosplay and stuff like that.
What was the best cosplay you saw?
I think some of the best cosplay was, let's see, there were a lot of people that were dressing up as folks from Borderlands. And one of the things in Borderlands is that they're doing that kind of cel-shaded animation style. So there's like the thick lines outlining people, and shadows are really kind of angularly drawn and stuff. And so people did costumes and makeup in that style, which I thought was really cool. So they were like, would like Sharpie extra creases and shadows into their costumes and stuff. So that was neat. There was a decided lack of Assassin's Creed cosplay this year. It is definitely toned down. I think the newest stuff that they were showing was actually kind of unfortunate. They didn't have any playable demos of either the Rogue game that they have, nor the new Unity game. And I think that probably has to do with them being both kind of delayed. But the demo videos that they had were kind of lackluster. It was like the Rogue game, where you play as a Templar, is like, they didn't show any new mechanics at all. You're pretty much just a mad assassin guy who's hunting assassins. And it's there was still the jumping off of a tower, there was still the eagle noise, there was the same kind of wrist blade stuff. So I didn't really get how that's a different game. And then Unity, they kind of talked a little bit about how there's kind of co-op play, but even all the stuff that they did not look different. You're still sneaking around, jumping down. I mean, it's in France now, so they have cathedrals and big buildings, and everyone has a French accent. So I guess that's novel, but I'm not sure if it's enough. And especially, I don't know if you'd heard about the controversy with the multiplayer aspect of it.
No.
A while ago, for the PSP, they released a game, Assassin's Creed Liberation, and that one you played a female assassin, and so I think in Black Flag it mentions something about that. You cross over into that game a little bit in Black Flag, and so it's always assumed that there are female assassins, but in Assassin's Creed Unity, initially they were going to be there, and now they're not. And I don't know what the deal is. I mean, it's that one, they're really pushing the multiplayer co-op mission aspect of it. And, you know, it potentially could bring a lot more people to the game, because people would be playing at the same time. The multiplayer in Assassin's Creed games was always that it was kind of a see if you can spot the assassin game, which was this like game of tag. So this was the first time that you could just play through like the normal parts of the game, and kind of deciding, oh no, we can't have female assassins seems completely arbitrary. I mean, I don't know how much it really matters, like development wise, but I feel like, you know, if you have the models already from a previous game, it can't be that much to update. But, you know, and even if you don't, if all you do is make them a female character and give and voice act them as a female, it'll be fine. It just seemed like an arbitrary kind of omission. But I don't know. I'm still kind of on the fence about the game. I never played Black Flag. Did you?
I played it for about 15 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, after Assassin's Creed 3, like, all the emotional capital for that game has kind of been sucked out of the room. I think if there was one thing I would have I really liked about this year going to PAX that was not specifically in the kind of PAX space was that we were able to go to a couple pretty good restaurants nearby, and I think the reason we were able to go to them was because they were up a hill. And I hate to say that, but I mean, it was really saturated right at the convention center. But then if you go up towards Capitol Hill, that hill gets really steep pretty quickly in like a block. And if you go two blocks out there, I mean, there are decidedly less convention goers up that hill. And we went to two places, which I thought were great. There's Sun Liquors, which is a they have a liquor distillery and then a small bar and restaurant. And the cocktails were excellent. The fries were exactly what I needed that day. And then just a little bit from that is a place called Rumba, which is a mostly rum bar, although they have other drinks too. And they have kind of a Caribbean and tapas kind of setup for food. Their rum list was ridiculous. I have a picture of it somewhere, and I swear there were 200 bottles of rum on this menu. It was really kind of ridiculous because I'm like, I have no idea what I'm doing.
No one would ever say, why is the rum gone?
Yeah, so Rumba and Sun Liquors were like the two good finds food-wise for the trip. And yeah, it was good. It was nice to be in Seattle and see kind of rain. I mean, I think it only rained maybe 2 days of the 5 days we were kind of up there. And I don't know, I actually had forgotten how nice it is. California is really, really in drought mode right now. So it was really interesting to be out and be like, hey, what's that wet stuff falling from the sky?
Bring some of that back.
Yeah, I hope so. I don't know if it'll come soon enough or what. But in any case, we have spent almost 40 minutes talking about Penny Arcade Expo. I'm sure there was other stuff to talk about this
which
week.
Which I'm sure we'll be able to get into next week with a potential guest.
Possibly. We'll see. We're hoping so anyway. So I hope you've enjoyed this mostly kind of PAX-themed episode of the Not Think Podcast.
Mostly. I would say this was our PAX-tacular. The Not a Thing PAX-tacular.
Yeah, well, speaking of that, one of the things that was amazing this year, and I'll end with this one, is that Cards Against Humanity was out. And they always do something kind of fun every year. Like last year, they released a box that would fit the game and all of its expansions, which they called the Bigger Blacker Box. And it was kind of fun. And they had a huge booth on the expo floor. This year they had a slightly smaller booth, but what they did was they had all the creators of the game, all of the kind of lead writers out, and if you stood in a line, they would help craft a custom card for you. And so they initially they had a bunch of signs for like, you know, we'll make fun of you and turn that into a card. But I think by the time I had gotten there, which was like on the third day, I think they were just tired and they wanted to move people through. So they were just asking you what you wanted on the card. So of course, what I did was make a card for the Not a Thing podcast. So our podcast has arrived. We now have, not only do we have 100 episodes, we've been recording for 2 years. We now have a card with the Cards Against Humanity logo on it that says the Not a Thing podcast.
We've made it.
So we'll have to have a game soon. I'm a little concerned about what this card is going to be the answer for, but we'll see.
Maybe we could make that a running segment, is every episode you can choose a card at random and mix it with our card.
Okay, I'll have to find my deck. We'll see what we can do.
Well, you've got all the expansions. We can make this last a while.
Yeah, it's true. Right on. Well, I will get on that, and we'll see what happens. I will talk to you next week, Brendan.
Till next time, Alan.